Thank you very much, Larry, and thank you to everybody else who's attended the session. I hope that my few words will bring some hope to different people. When I was thinking about this the other day, about service above the group level, I joined OA after a very turbulent time in my life. And the turbulence basically came from a whole bunch of things, anxieties, grossly overweight, obese, lazy, and all these other things that most go through. And I remember when I got into OA and I accepted it as the end of the road. This was it. It had to be this. I was going to die because of all the different things that were in my life. And I looked at it, thought about it, and I said, and there was a slogan and a table, and I said, I want OA to be around tomorrow because I need it. And I put that in my own words, and I thought about it deeply, and I said, well, if I don't do it and everybody else acts as I act, well, then OA won't be around. Someone has to do it. And I said, okay, I'll give it a shot because I'm the type of person that gets in, I read, I do, I understand, and then I buy into it, lock, stock, and barrel. And that's what I did. And the first thing that I did above the group level was went to a WSBC conference, World Service Business Conference. I went there as a volunteer because I wasn't involved at with the intergroup. I knew who our intergroup was, but I didn't understand that, but I just said I'd go. So I went there. I met a lot of people, and some of those people are in this session today. And I got to understand a whole lot better of how things functions and why it is what it is. And when I went back, I said, yep, I've got to do it because if I don't, and everybody thinks like I am, OA is not going to be around for me tomorrow. And that was the driving force behind me. So I got involved with our local intergroup. I live in Newfoundland on the east coast of Canada, small community called Flat Rock, and our intergroup was small even then. It's even smaller now, and I got involved in that. And so the next year, I was involved in that, and I went to the WSBC as a delegate. And participated with it with my region, Region 6. And I've participated at the world level, being at the WSBC. And I grew more fond of it. And I think it was that one that I met a couple of men in OA that sort of said, well, you know, like, why ain't men joining OA? Why ain't men, being involved at all these levels to make it stronger, but also to be able to make it worthwhile? Because I was really benefiting from this. So we started what we called a men's service team, and we worked and we worked and we worked, and that I guess was at probably equal to the intergroup level. But I still believe, and I'm still involved at the intergroup, MIGOA, the Men's Intergroup of Overeaters Anonymous. And at that level, our mission is how do we make it easy for men in OA, and how do we make it easy for women to accept men in OA and make it all part one and the same. So some men find it very hard to share with women in the room, and some women find it very hard to share with men in the room. And our job is to be able to say we should be able to, where possible, get to overcome that so everybody can enjoy recovery. And that's what I've as part of MIGOA, that's what I've been working at. And we're working with the board and our groups right now. I think we're up to 20 groups as matter of part of our intergroup. And like I'm the secretary of that group. And yes, it takes a bit of time to take the minutes, but prepare the agenda and do all the other things. But every time that I'm doing it, I get a value out of it, because the value I get is that I'm abstinent for another day, free from compulsive overeating. Having my abstinence always comes to my mind when I'm doing service, and say, I'm doing this so others can benefit. I'm doing this so I can benefit. That's the way it worked for me, and that's the way that I continue to do it today. I continue to work, and I will, because I truly, truly believe if OA stopped tomorrow, a short while after that, I would not be on this great earth, because I need OA to be around tomorrow. I need to continue to have my peace and serenity. I need to continue to have my abstinence, and I need to be able to continue to have this life, this family life, but also my OA life that I'm having today. I had none of this before OA. I was living in a fog. I was living in a world where a whole bunch of stuff was going on, and all of that just seemed to calm right down as I started to work the steps, as I started to use the tools. And the tool that I love best, and the tool that we're talking about today, is service. And above the group level. And that's what we have to do. I still do a fair bit of service at the group level, because that's where it starts. But we can't stop there, because the organization, in order for the organization to be around tomorrow to support these groups and all of this type of stuff, we need people to volunteer at the upper levels. And the more that we do that, the more that we benefited. I really, really benefited from going to WSBC. I was there three times, two as a delegate and one as a volunteer. And then I participated in my region, but I've never went to a Region 6 convention, for a variety of reasons, but I've participated into it. But right now, my greatest participation is at the intergroup level. And I really, really enjoy that immensely, because I really firmly believe that we are making a difference. We're doing things that people will benefit. We're doing things so that women can benefit. We're doing things that men, so that men can benefit, and everybody will be better off tomorrow. We have to be able to continue to get the message out there to those that are not in our rooms, to be able to say, come in and listen. And I can safely say that after my spiritual awakening, and I've had a few, but that I really truly bought into it, and I knew that this was what I needed. I've been in the program, and I've been abstinent for 8.5 years, and I owe my life to OA. But I can tell you more than anything else, I continually say that I'm living a life beyond my wildest dreams. We had three girls. Now we got five grandchildren, four boys and one girl. And all this week, the three boys, my oldest daughter went on holidays. They've been with us all week. And I've enjoyed every minute of it. Yes, Granny, can you do this and this? Come here and there and all this kind of stuff. And yes, it's beaten me up because I'm an old man. But still, it's love. It's working. It's love. It's there, and it truly is. And then this was planned about 2 months ago. And then 2 weeks ago, my daughter Jane says, "Oh, by the way, that pup we got ordered, that's going to come while we're away. So you're going to have to take care of that, Dad." So they left Sunday. When did the pup arrive? Monday. So I'd been looking at, but it's joy. It's truly joy. And I'd encourage everybody to look at service beyond the group level, so that OA will be around tomorrow for a whole bunch of people throughout the world to enjoy. And with that, I'll say I'm done. Thank you very much for the opportunity to spread some hope.
Thank you, Jack. Our second speaker is Gary D.
Hi, everybody. I'm a recovered compulsive eater and a member of the Saturday Solutions Group. My name is Gary. I got to slow down when I speak now. Thank you, everybody who is doing service. And thank you, Jack. That was lovely. I'm probably not going to be as lovely as Jack was. I'm going to assume that I'm talking primarily to a group of men, even though I know there are women here doing service. Here's the thing. The first 2.5 years OA was in existence, men weren't allowed in the fellowship. There were no men in OA. And it wasn't because there were no men who wanted to join, it's because men weren't allowed in. Women felt they couldn't share about their body, about eating their prep food if men were there. And they didn't feel safe, so men weren't allowed in. And here's the main reason I think we need to talk about men doing service above the group level. We really need each other. Things have certainly changed since 1960, but here's the truth. They were willing to let us die. As in 1960, if I was dying of an eating disorder, they were willing to let me die rather than let me in because they were uncomfortable sharing around me. Things have changed. They are my sisters in recovery. But the truth is, it's always been in OA, men kind of have to look out for men. It's just the way it is. At the last census, which was done in 2017, men were 13% of Overeaters Anonymous. The meetings I attend tend to be have a greater representation of men, greater percentage of men. But that's a pretty low percentage, 13%. And I would suggest to you, at least in my experience, men doing experience above the group level is a smaller percentage. I became a trustee in June of 22. And when I joined the board, there was only one other male trustee. There's one male trustee on the board. And I can't tell you what a relief it was because, you become a trustee, it's a nerve-wracking experience. It's just, at least for me, and my understanding is everybody I know has become a trustee, it's intimidating. It's intimidating. Oh, by the way, the interpreters, if I'm talking too slow, like too fast, do something like that to slow me down. Yeah. Okay. So when I became a trustee, there was one other man on the board, and I was terrified because it's very intimidating. And, I can't tell you how comforting it was just to have one other man in the room. And that year, there was, like I said, there was one other male trustee. And then when we met with the region chairs, there were no male region chairs. Like the region chairs were all, frankly, elderly white women. We're making a big push in a way toward diversity, but it's hard to tell. I mean, we're working hard at it. But it's not showing up that well. Now, this year, there are more men. This year, there are four men on the board, and I believe there are two male region chairs. But that's 2 out of 11 regions. And it's not simply a matter of looks, it's a matter of being there for each other. There are issues that men care about that aren't properly addressed. I am the chair, a co-chair, trustee co-chair of the Unity with Diversity Committee. We've done a lot of good work this year. We did really important work with expanding meetings into underrepresented communities, particularly in Black and Hispanic communities. We've reached out to Native Americans. We've done a fair amount of work helping members of the LGBTQ plus community feel more welcomed at meetings. We've also done the same regarding racial issues in the 10th tradition of what is and what is not an outside issue. We did nothing involving men, literally nothing. And the reason for that is at the Unity and Diversity Committee, there were representatives from BIPOC, that's Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Committee, intergroup. There were representatives from the LGBTQ community. There were representatives from all sorts of communities, but nobody from the men's intergroup. No men. There were a few men, but they were from the LGBTQ community. Without that kind of representation, frankly, the issues that concern men in OA aren't spoken of. They aren't dealt with. There is a group in the virtual region, in our region, titled, the name of the group is Progress, Not Patriarchy. And I have suggested to the leaders of that group that that's a fairly unwelcoming. I have 35 years of recovery, and I find it unwelcoming. I can't imagine how a newcomer would feel faced, a newcomer male would feel faced with that fact of coming in and hearing that. I also think it's a 10th tradition issue, but that's not likely to be addressed by women. I can tell you over the years, like I said, I've been an active member of Overeaters Anonymous for 35 years, that I've always had some service position. I was brought to my first intergroup meeting 6 months into my recoveries, and I've been active in intergroups, Region 8 and World Service, and now the virtual region, the whole time I've been in OA. I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure some of the men here will relate to this, how many times I've heard women say men are only interested in looks, men are only after one thing. I've even heard women say men are dogs or men are pigs at meetings. I have never heard another woman after that share, "We don't do that here." I have never heard another woman say at the meeting, "That's inappropriate," or "These are our brothers in recovery. We don't speak of them that way. We don't treat them that way." This isn't a fourth step thing or a fifth step thing where I'm trying to run off my resentments. I'm trying to tell you, like, I corresponded for a while with this guy named AG. He was the first male to join OA. After that 2.5 year, what happens, AG had started in Texas, had started another food fellowship called Gluttons Anonymous. And after 2.5 years of OA, AA and Gluttons Anonymous merged together. And that's how men came in through that merger. And since GA already existed, there was a Gamblers Anonymous. We went with Overeaters Anonymous. And AG did a lot to bring in more AA principles and more of the 12 steps and to revitalize some of that. But he said the same thing. It's important that we're here with one another. It's important that when other men come into a regional assembly or an intergroup or World Service, and they see a dais, and they see people sitting at the desks, or people leading a business meeting or participating in a business meeting, it's important that they see some men there. It's welcoming. It's assuring. It lets us know that we belong too. This is common practice in diversity. In the understanding of diversity with race, it's common practice with LGBTQ plus. It's common practice, frankly, outside of OA, with making sure women are represented. And it's an important part of OA. It's also true that we have a perspective and we have something to offer in Overeaters Anonymous. I also want to say, I mean, this sounds like a lot of bitching and griping, but to tell you the truth, I love being in OA. I mean, I love this way. I love the 12-step way of life. I love the way everything about this. I love it. And I've really enjoyed the opportunity to be of service in OA. And OA, and I believe this is through an act of God, but OA has a space for whatever natural skills or whatever abilities a person might have, God has a way of putting those to use within a way. And I think as brothers in recovery, we're offered a unique opportunity to share some of those gifts, both with our brothers and with our sisters in OA. Thank you for letting me babble on for 10 minutes.
Thank you, Gary. Our third speaker is Don C.
Hi everyone, my name is Don, compulsive eater and food addict, from Connecticut in the States. I've been in OA for 42 years, abstinent for 40, maintaining about 190 pound weight loss now for a long time. I came and I've never left. OA saved my life. Not an exaggeration. It literally saved my life. When I came here, all I wanted to do was end it. Apparently, God had other plans. I'm going to take a slightly different direction than the other two speakers have taken, based upon a bunch of work that I've done in the past on training intergroups and stuff like that. So take what you want and leave the rest. I think in the end, hopefully you'll come to the same conclusion that I came to a very long time ago. If you don't step up and do the service, you're going to die. The relapse will just come, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. So I accepted the idea pretty much from the beginning that service was not optional. It was the 12th step. It was part of getting well and staying well. And if I wanted what these people had, I'd better do it and better keep doing it. The big book tells me helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery, page 97. There's another quote in there on Roman numeral 7, page 17, that says, strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. Underscore the word permanent. No, there's no cure for my disease, but there is a way to keep it arrested. And if I don't pass on the gift, I'm not working to live in the program, and I'm going to not be able to hold on to the freedom. In the 80s and 90s, so I came out in 82. So in the 80s and 90s, I was working very long hours, often traveling out of the country a week or two a month. Because of my schedule, I did not formally join any intergroups per se, but I did begin leading step studies and retreats around the US and Canada. That changed in 97, and I have to tell you the story. Why did I step up 27 years ago? Because standing in a hallway, looking into an auditorium where about 600 OAs were gathered at an OA East Coast convention in upstate New York, I made the mistake of criticizing OA, and the leaders on the stage to a woman standing beside of me looking in also. She asked what I had done to help with the event. And what was I doing to help OA's declining membership? I didn't have the right answers. She proceeded to ream my butt for complaining about OA when I had the ability to step up and try to help and was doing nothing. She was a tough New Yorker and she used some very strong and colorful language to cut my arrogant ass right down to size. I didn't know who I was talking to at the time. A few minutes later, when they brought her up to the front onto the stage to speak, I realized that I had been talking to our region trustee. She really did me over. Yes, I went back home, and 1 week later, I joined the local intergroup. And the rest is history in terms of above group work. That was 97. It was also the year of my retirement from the corporate world, 30 years in the corporate world. But thanks to her, I didn't really retire. I simply switched jobs. My new full-time job was OA service. So a quick summary of service I've been doing to keep myself free from this disease. Because my wife and I have relocated so often due to her corporate transfers, I have chaired six different intergroups in the states of New York, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. I've served on both the Region 6 and Region 7 boards. I developed an 11-hour intergroup renewal training. Some of you may have been through it. Trained several hundred intergroup officers from approximately 100 different intergroups across the country in Canada, U.S. and Canada. You can see a summary of that on the Region 6 website. I developed sponsor training modules and I conducted in-person training for several years in Region 6 And then as the pandemic hit, then I was doing this intergroup training on Zoom all over the world, and including for the virtual region. I think there's a podcast on there someplace of me doing sponsorship training. I've led 40 OA step study weekend retreats across the US and Canada over the years. I've led 12, 15-week step studies over the years. I'm in the middle of 16 right now. I have attended 15 World Service Business Conferences. I've served on the World Service Business Conference Literature Committee for a bunch of years, on and off. I've been very involved in writing 11 pieces of OA literature, the biggest of which was the 3 years that I spent working on the new 12 and 12. Full disclosure related to this subject today, I have rejected several times the opportunity for the trustee job. Why? Because my long suit is the steps and working with people on changing their lives. I can help greater numbers of suffering human beings doing what I do best, helping them transform their lives through the steps. And that's why I repeatedly keep turning down the trustee job. Some thoughts on inspiring people to step up. Attracting is everything. There's an old slogan that says, if you build it, they will come. And that's the guts of all of the intergroup leading and rebuilding and training that I've done since retiring in 97. This is a program of attraction, and that totally applies to groups, intergroups, above the group level. If you make it really useful and people in recovery get involved, they get involved because they want to help. How to make an intergroup more useful is simply create opportunities for members to strengthen their personal recovery. It's really a simple process. Everything, absolutely everything in OA, for me, begins with personal recovery. That's the only reason we exist, right? Tradition five, to help other compulsive eaters. Intergroup's value is measured by its usefulness to members and to meetings. Intergroups lead different ways, and they can attract in different ways. They certainly lead through service and information. Intergroups, by their very nature, are in the best position to inform, educate, organize, suggest, energize, and provide opportunities for members to strengthen their personal programs. Intergroups create opportunities for members to help themselves. Miracles happen, when people put themselves into a position to receive them, and intergroups can help do that. And most importantly, everyone is part of intergroup, whether they attend intergroup meetings or not. Your resource base is the whole fellowship, all your meetings. Intergroup's greatest service to members and to OA is to show people how to strengthen their personal recovery, show people how to work the program. More recovery, as I said, means more sponsors, more service, more attracting and retaining, more OA growth, and more carrying the message to more suffering compulsive eaters. A word on targeted recruiting, which I did a lot of around the country in the training. Remember, few people will just volunteer to step up, but most will say yes if asked. People don't have to come to intergroup to do work, as I said before, for intergroup. They want to help their friends, they want to help OA, and they want to help the still suffering. So whatever they can do, even if they don't have time to come to intergroup. If they see intergroup as doing that kind of work, recruitment is easy. Ask them to do specific tasks, not general service. A clear task assumes a clearly defined intergroup plan, which shows the volunteers how they fit into the bigger picture. Remember, the intergroup team is a force multiplier, to use that military term. And yes, I did spend time in the military. Force multiplier. A few good people in recovery can recruit, organize, and inspire huge numbers to do service work. Speaking of a resource base, reality check is, as I talk with intergroups around the country, is always in order. What do I mean by that? What is your base? How large exactly is your base? You can estimate that by counting the number of meetings, taking the average number attending, dividing by two. That equals an approximate number of people. That's your base. I divide by two because in the face-to-face world, people go to the same meetings all the time, and we don't want to count them twice. I don't know if that's the case in the virtual world. How do you publicize your opportunities? That's critical. There's nothing to attract if you don't have any communications out there. Let's see what's the most A high-value intergroup serves membership in the tracts, helps the still suffering, strengthens OA as a whole. First priorities are training opportunities to help members strengthen their recovery. As I said, I had some stuff here on leadership. Let me just say it. A leader's job is to organize and energize. That's the net. They express and suggest, but they don't dictate. Their job is more than simply being a facilitator. Let me just close with one thing. In summary, there's no they in OA. We are they. If things are going to get done, they need to be done in order to carry the message. It's up to each of us to step up. We all have different abilities or skills, but a big part of recovery and holding on to recovery is growing into a different person who does different things. If I don't change my thinking and my behavior, I continue to get what I always got. So when someone says to me, "I don't know how to do it," I say, "Of course you don't. We learn by doing, and there are lots of us around here to help you. We'll help you. So step up and be of help." Thanks.
Thank you, Don. We will now open the floor for questions and answer sessions. Okay. Are there statistics on men in OA and how many are LGBT? BTQ, age range, marital status, just curious. Anyone care to answer that?
We do have statistics, but not they cross-reference that way. We know, like I said, 13% of the OA population, it is 2017, we do it every 10 years. 13% is male. We do know how many identify, what percentage identify as LGBTQ plus, but I don't know that off the top of my head, but that survey is available. I'm going to try and look it up on my iPad as we're talking. I probably have it somewhere. We do know last year at World Service Business Conference, we had that somewhat cross-referenced on who showed up for World Service Business Conference, but we don't have it for the OA population as a whole. So we don't have any cross-referencing around that, like how many of the men are also in LGBTQ and so forth, and how many are married, how many are single, that sort of thing.
Question that I see come across my screen was, do the speakers feel that the percentage of men have increased? And in our work as the men's intergroup, I believe we have. I believe the number of men-only meetings have, I probably used the word grossly, but it's probably more accurate to say greatly. So there's a lot of good things that are happening that allows both men and women better recovery. And part of that is the men's, call it the men's movement, but the part of the men's movement is to be able to try to get that whole thing in balance. As Gary said, 13% was the number that was thrown at me when I was at WSBC, I'm thinking back in probably 2018. And I thought that was really unfair because I knew what I was benefiting from it. And I felt that there was men that was not being able to benefit because the message wasn't getting out there. So that was part of my reasoning to do that and move forward. And I believe that we have accomplished a lot. And I believe the number of men's meetings and the number of men has increased because of the work that has been done by the men's intergroup. I'll pass.
I'll just comment or maybe ask a question. In looking at the data the other day, I counted up 20 virtual men's groups and 20 face-to-face men's groups. Of course, none of those virtual men's groups existed, 3 years ago, I don't think, maybe one or two. So obviously there's growth there. But I don't know exactly where it might have been 5 years ago, but I also have the impression we've grown somewhat. I see more men. I interact more men, certainly in my own region. Men are pretty well represented in the meetings. They're well represented on the Region 6 board. They're well represented in the step studies that I'm doing, all this stuff. So I would say, I don't, know the actual data, but I would say we're going in the right direction. AA is our big source, of course. Half of the meetings I go to now are full of men from AA.
Okay.
I would just point out, given that this webinar is about men doing service, when we have a percentage like 13%, and it's been pretty stable at that about that level for a long time, one of the problems is we get these figures from surveys, and that information is only as good as the people who respond to them. So if men don't step up even to the point of responding to the survey, we have no real accurate way of knowing. I mean, just a simple survey. Like, for example, when we send out the agenda questionnaire every year, only about 25% of intergroups respond to that. So what I'm saying is that without enough response, there might be many more men in OA than 13%. But with not enough men responding to the survey, we have no way of knowing that. So yeah, guys, step up.
Thank you. It is clear that service is important, but why is it important for men to do service?
That's an easy one, right? It's the same 12-step program for everybody. Getting well is about rewiring our brain. No matter what your gender is, and pre-wiring and holding on to it is passing on the message. If we don't pass it on, we lose it, no matter the gender.
I think it's important for men to do service because, as Gary said, at there was points that at the world service level or the board level, there was no men, and the views of men and the issues around men need to be heard in order to be able to make sure that we are around tomorrow to be able to do it. I don't think there's a big need for me personally, to separate the genders, but there are a lot of women that cannot speak in a meeting with men. There's a lot of men that can't speak in a meeting with women. So we need to be able to allow everybody to come into OA, everybody that compulsively overeats, and whatever we have to do that, we have to do. And one of them is men has got to do service at above the group level.
I think it's also important, like what Don said, one good reason that men should be doing service above the group level is because they don't want to die. Self-sacrificing action is what the big book says. But also, it's also important, I think, that we be seen. Every time one of us does something, spiritually, little fat boys all over the planet go, yay, he made it. Like one of us found a way out.
Thank you. Okay. What is the most important message about service that should be given to the newcomer?
Do it. Just do it. I heard that slogan, and I live by that. And I can guarantee you, as I said when I was saying a few words, I would not have my life as I have it today if I didn't do service. If I just had to sit on my morals, I would not be where I'm to. And I'm in a really, really good, happy place. And one of the slogans, I've already mentioned one about OA not being around, but the other one is just do it. And we have to, because we can't count on somebody else. So it is important for newcomers to understand, just do it.
That's also really part of the recovery process. Getting well in this program is this long journey from self-centeredness, me, 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 to other-centeredness or spiritual centeredness. From how do I get to how do I give? How can I be useful? Love and service, as Dr. Bob said. So right from the very beginning, if you start getting out of yourself by doing things, I came in, 42 years ago, there was still smoking in the room, and I was told, Don, you have to do something in every meeting. And what you're qualified to do right now is to clean the ashtrays and put the chairs away. And I said, really? And they said, do it. So, okay, I did it. And that kind of helped me say, okay, I have some value here. And the next thing it was, I got to make the coffee, but that took 6 months before I got to make the coffee, right? And it took a while, but I got it early on that something mattered other than Dawn. And if I was going to these meetings, then okay, what can I do? I can set up the chairs, I can clean up the kitchen and so forth. So long term, I learned think about what I can put into the world rather than what I can just get. Thanks.
I would agree with the other two speakers eventually, but one of the first things I would tell a newcomer is that allowing us to serve them is a great service. Allowing us to, receiving help and love from us is a great service. Thank you.
Okay, and since you've made all those responses, the question came up, how do you respond to groups saying members are doing service simply by being at the meeting? Is this enough?
No,
No.
because OA won't be around tomorrow. The meeting might be around tomorrow, but OA won't be around tomorrow if we stay at the group level. Groups got to be supported by intergroups. Intergroups got to be supported by regions. Regions got to be supported by World Service. And the pyramid is like this, and it has to be because you got a lot of groups, and we're not in this alone. There's a whole bunch of us, and we have to be able to rise above the group to be able to make sure that OA is going to be around tomorrow. And I pass.
When I came in the early 80s, it was around 13,000 groups. Now we're at 6,000, 6,100, whatever the current number is, So we're half the size that we were. If people don't step up and do what needed, as you said, we die. It's only a matter of time. A lot of other fellowships have been down this path, and eventually, right? I used to work in the corporate world, and one of the things I did was study corporations that failed. The corporations that failed consistently are those who did not adjust, who did not make the adjustments that they needed to make. They just did the same things over and over and over, and they fall apart. And we're the same. We have to adapt. Yes, we're a 12-step program, but we're in a different world now. Look at where we are right now. This is not the world we were in 5 years ago, this virtual world. Three quarters of our meetings are virtual now. So, what does that really mean long term for OA?
First of all, I have no idea how big I'm supposed to be. How am I supposed to know how big OA is supposed to be? If other people are getting recovery in some other food fellowship, I don't, if you're getting recovery at
Recovery.
Disneyland, I'm all for it. If you're not dying of compulsive eating wherever you're getting it, God bless you. I'm for it. That's for openers for me. As far as sitting in the room or not, this has to do with what's self-honesty for you. If that's the best you can do today, if that's honestly the best you can do is show up at a meeting, God bless you. That's service. That's wonderful. I don't know if it's 12-step service or not, but it's service. But you have to be honest with yourself the same way you are with your food. And if all you're doing is getting by resting on your laurels, then it's time to get off your ass and into action. And only you and your sponsor and your God know the answer to that question, whether or not it's time for you to be doing more service or not. I think it is important that all of us do what we can do when we can do it for the good of the fellowship. Otherwise, we're not being self-supporting. But it is also true that if you're going through some grief or something like that, and the best you can do is show up at a meeting, thank you for showing up.
Okay, here's a question that I've just got. What are the speaker's thoughts for how to do outreach to men?
I'm going
Pick
to go
up the
first
phone.
here. I'm one of those annoying people who does. I do talk to people who are strangers. I do. When I meet somebody who's morbidly obese, I say to them, "I used to weigh 340 pounds, and I've kept it off for over 30 years. If you're interested, I'll talk to you." I do do that. But there's also, I do, and many people have spoken to me about it. I'm very laissez-faire with my anonymity. But there are the professional outreach and public information committees do a great job. We've done targeted this region particularly has done great outreach to men and others. We have now a new radio ad directed toward men and social media directed toward men. Reach out to your PIPO committee, or if you want to, or if you look at the PIPO manual, there's a new PIPO and professional outreach and public information manual that has lots of it's brand new, it's been combined, and it has lots of information on how to do targeted reach out, particularly for men.
Anybody else?
One of the things that we consistently do is, as I said, a large portion of the men that we have, well, let's say maybe 40% of the men in our rooms, maybe 50%, are also AA. So we encourage them to talk to their brothers and sisters over there at the, if appropriate, just to make sure that they know that we are available. So we get newcomers visiting every once in a while, not every once in a while, frequently stopping in on a Saturday morning and saying, "Well, I'm from the beverage program. I'm just visiting." So they're checking us out, right? So thank God, I'm talking the Saturday morning meeting. It's about 20 people, and about eight of them are men. So that's a good thing. That doesn't scare the men away. If it were 20 women, one guy comes in, not going to happen. Thanks.
Okay. Just a question of curiosity. Somebody wants to know when will be the next survey?
Every 10 years, so it'll probably be 2027.
Don's list of things for an intergroup went very quickly. Can he repeat that?
I'm sorry, which part?
Your list of things for an intergroup?
I'm not sure. I was talking about recruiting and resource bases and the things that a intergroup has to do, is to serve the membership. I don't remember exactly what I said. But that's the main thing. We're a program of attraction. If you build it, they will come, right? So if you're not attracting to your intergroup, and I've seen this a thousand times, if you're not getting people to come, then you're not doing something that attracts them. If there's no value add and they're taking an hour or two out of their week to go to intergroup, they're not going to do it. So you've got to put plans in place, strategic plans in place, starts with surveys, inventories, all that stuff, and build something that attracts people. So I've taken six intergroups, taken them from three or four people to 20 or 25 people, simply by putting in strategic plans that help people. Everything is about helping the members. It's the only reason we're here. No extraneous stuff, just things designed. Mostly it's about training. If you turn the intergroup into a training group that to a kind of supplement sponsorship, you're a winner because you're showing people how to work these steps, how to sponsor, how to do this kind of stuff that makes them their recovery good and helps pass it on. Because if anybody is in recovery, real recovery, they know they don't have any choice if they want to hold on to it, but to help others. It's that simply. There's no choice. No choice. It's not optional. That's part of the recovery process. So that's the whole secret. If you build it, they will come. That's how you attract people.
All right. Thank you to everyone who attended this webinar. Thank you to the speakers and to all who are do those doing service.